I have a prepared talk here. It lasts 10 minutes and 13 seconds. So maybe I'd be able to say something about some of the other things that have been said after I've finished this. That's if I can get to the end of this. So I apologise for reading to you. All I'm capable of these days. When Jack Boddy contacted me a while ago to ask if I'd participate in this weekend, I made the fatal mistake of allowing our conversation to get further than the initial hello. I should have known that the only way to stop being ensnared was to terminate the discussion before it began. But I listened, and thinking the task didn't seem too onerous, I later sat down to write my simple little 10-minute talk. However, on examining the brief which he supplied, which was read to you, I was forced to confront difficult sociological, philosophical, and ethical questions, ones which I haven't thought about for a while. As I struggled to clarify my thoughts on topics such as relevant issues and themes, concerns in life and work, role of the New Zealand composer in the here and now, ideal scenarios, future dreams, etc., etc., and at first only faintly audible mantra began sounding in my head. As it insisted more and more, I recognised those infamous lines from Greg McGee's Foreskin's Lament. What are ya? What are ya? And as I listened even more closely, a derisive echo like a ghost repercussion, couched in appropriate vernacular, became audible. Ya wanker. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't ignore this accusation. It became such an aggressive roar in my head that all rational thought was impossible. It seemed the only way to mute the mantra was to tackle it head on. Today's honest and open social environment has given us permission to acknowledge publicly certain previously unmentionable aspects of human nature and behaviour. For instance, it's now not only okay, but it's desirable for men to cry in public and for women to play rugby football. We're much more tolerant now of various behaviours which not so long ago we wouldn't have accepted. It's clear we've arrived at an enlightened age in which local, national, and even international communities feel moved to share and attempt to understand the innermost thoughts and feelings of others. For example, it's regarded as perfectly acceptable in contemporary New Zealand society to come out regarding one's sexual orientation. More and more, New Zealanders are publicly identifying themselves as gay and lesbian and other things. Coming out doesn't now just refer to the glittering social occasion of a debutante's ball. It's now okay for one to not only admit to, but be proud of, personal characteristics which not long ago would have meant social exclusion or worse. And this is the reason I felt it appropriate and safe to address the question carried by that previously mentioned irresistible mantra. What are you, you wanker? Wanker. Taboo slang. Noun. A worthless or stupid person. Wank, taboo slang, verb of a man only. To masturbate, noun, an instance of masturbation. Although we've become much more liberal in many of our attitudes, perhaps the public airing of this particular topic still makes us a little uncomfortable. The term wanker carries with it a complex set of meanings which resonate from within the still difficult category of male sexuality. Masturbation is something which most boys and men have experienced, usually surreptitiously and often in a state of denial, even when committing the act itself. The "this can't possibly be happening to me" syndrome, or the "once it's over, pretend it never happened" syndrome. The pleasurable physical sensations produced by the act are spiced by the social disgrace which would accompany discovery or disclosure. All those who indulge exhibit a lack of moral fibre. They give in to temptation by committing the ultimate self-indulgence. Of course, in the virile world of good old-fashioned heterosexual conquest, self-abuse is an obvious admission of a wimpish lack of success. To be identified as a wanker casts one into the bottomless pit reserved for the very worst of sinful pleasure seekers. People such as these cannot be expected to take up a proper adult role in society. They're forever cursed with a fundamental weakness. They're flawed individuals, incapable of the self-discipline exhibited by useful, well-balanced social contributors. They are the prisoners of their own appetites. Of course, the term wanker, as we discover from the dictionary, carries far more serious accusations than solely that of one prone to sexual self-stimulation. If the wanker himself is stupid and worthless, then what he does and how he lives his life is similarly denigrated. The term is the ultimate put-down. It implies that the person and everything associated with them has no relevance to the real world of authentic social interaction. Their myopic, inward-looking, insulated and isolated sensibility dispossesses them of any credibility with the broader collective. They risk becoming cross-eyed through constant self-gratification. They are marginalised and refused the mana bestowed by the social majority. So, even although I know I'm at present speaking to a mutually supportive group of people, I'm still nervously reluctant to stand before you and admit that I am a composer and teacher working in a university. Oh, the relief of finally outing myself on this matter. Because, as you all know, institutionalised composers invariably fall into the wanker category. They sit in their ivory towers, protected from the cut and thrust of the real world, funded by the public purse to rummage around in their own navels. It's common knowledge they're a bunch of drones, carrying out irrelevant tasks, and most dastardly of all, being paid for their sloth. They're not just wankers, they're professional wankers. They fit the old saying, those who can do, those who can't teach. Remarks made in an article by Robin Marconi, published in an open letter to New Zealand composers in a recent issue of Canzona, carry this inference of university music departments, and I assume the composers within them, as being self-serving and irrelevant. Quote, "There's a case for abolishing university music departments in their present form. They do not prepare graduates for a career in classical music because the only careers in classical music are in the universities and they are not going to give up their careers for anyone else," unquote. And later in the same article, quote, "What you don't need," in university music departments he means, "is a moribund academic body with jobs for life who get in the way of a professional education in real-world classical music," unquote. So perhaps I should continue to hang my head in shame at my profession and skulk on the periphery of society, hoping no one will put me on the spot regarding what I do for a living. Or perhaps now, in this newly supportive age of understanding, I can trust that the true value of wanking will be recognised, and I can hold my head high and be accepted back into the collective bosom of society as a valuable, nay, indispensable contributor to culture. Perhaps the derision will turn to acceptance when it's seen that professional wanking is not the sinecure it's cracked up to be. I'm sorry to emphasise this word all the time. Wanking arises from a self-driven, internally motivated need. It's a good example of doing something for its own sake. Doing something for its own sake is, of course, an essential and accepted aspect of some forms of social behaviour. All sport and recreation is a wank. All sports people who earn a living from their activities are therefore, by definition, professional wankers. What could be more self-defeating and indulgent than chasing a small, quaintly shaped ball around a paddock for 80 minutes? Of course, all pure research is a wank. investigating an idea for its own sake, just to see where it leads. Solely in the cause of intellectual and human curiosity must surely be an indulgent waste of resources, unconnected as it is to the real world of commercial application. Research, both pure and applied, along with teaching, forms the dual mandate of an academic. This is designed to encourage research-informed teaching and teaching-informed research. It has a long history as a successful educational method. It has, over the past century in New Zealand, produced resourceful and imaginative graduates, many of whom have been encouraged and supported by their teachers, whose obsession with the subject for its own sake has inspired in their students a similar commitment. The positive effects on society at large of our community of teachers and researchers within the universities and other institutions is undeniable. Just think of the body of vibrant original musical works produced by university-based composers over the last 50 years or more. This does not take into account a host of other contributions in the area of scholarship and broader cultural initiatives, like this. The freedom to follow your bliss, whether it is commercially viable or not, is surely still a valid aspiration for a creative artist within our present culture. The fact that it is more and more under threat from the quality assessors and the accountability police surprises me in this newly enlightened age. Of course, there's no reason why industry and commerce shouldn't include music as a commodity. But I hope composers who for various reasons are unsuited to this arena are not invalidated, as are an increasing number of academics presently engaged in pure rather than applied research in the universities. So, I for one stand up to be counted amongst the wankers. Long may the habit of obsessively self-driven, work for its own sake, pure research-oriented effort be encouraged and fostered wherever it takes root. Then maybe the next time I sit down to contemplate these difficult questions, that aggressive mantra I mentioned earlier may be transformed into a more optimistic one. May my ears remain young, may my brain remain lucid, and may my heart remain full. Thank you.